The world is full of magic and wonder, if you know where to look. And I'm obsessed with looking for it. I'm Simon Sinek, and I host a podcast called A Bit of Optimism. Each week, I have a short conversation with someone who inspires me or teaches me something about life, leadership, and other curious things. I hope you'll join me on the journey. Listen to A Bit of Optimism on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. This is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200 percenters. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community. Listen to Life as a Gringo on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 257, episode 4 of Der Daily Zeitgeist, yeah! A production of iHeartRadio. This is a podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness, and it's Wednesday, October 6th, 2022. Mm-hmm. What are we working with today on the National Day
10-6, front? Big fella, National Coaches Day. Shout out all the coaches there, myself included. Right. Your father included. Jack, you ever coach before?
I have not coached before, other than, you know, dabbling with life coaching.
Oh, okay. Yes, no. Thank you. You helped me. Hey, I stopped biting my nails after working with you. Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah. You said just put spices on your fingers.
And that's my them. That's actually my cure for most things, most maladies, not just chewing your nails. Just put spices on your fingers.
It did help my insecurities as well. It's right. Also National Mad Hatter Day. Shout out to, was that mercury poisoning? Is that why they were mad?
Yeah, exactly.
National Noodle Day, National Orange Wine Day. I see you. People with the skin contact. People love fucking orange wine these days.
Skin on skin.
Yeah. Turns National Plus Size Appreciation Day. National German American Day. Boom.
Hey, there we go. Shout out to German Americans.
Yeah, what
Alex
is that?
Schmidt. Schmitty the Clan. You know, one of our finest. I think German American. Anyways, my name is Jack O'Brien, aka Mountain Dew. I'm crazy like a fool, cause I drink Mountain Dew. That is courtesy of Bruce Chili's, and it's Daddy Cool by Boney M. Boney M is a group that I'm just gaining an appreciation for because via my kids, because they have a dope song about Rasputin. That's a lot of fun. And was I just weirdly sheltered from Boney M, or are they...
I don't know.
Known? I don't know.
Man.
Anyways, I got to watch a YouTube video of them performing Daddy Cool this morning. And okay. It is a lot of fun. Highly recommend. Anyways, I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray!
Put a snake on me, oh, to make fun of Chuck. Put a snake on me, come and python me up. Put a snake on me. I can't get enough.
Shout out to TVZ Burner. Because you know what? Shacktoberfest. We saw the logo of Shacktoberfest. Looked like it was requisitely spooky, but Shaq had to add a big snake on
big
the logo
snake.
For good measure, I guess, to make it scarier. But it, for us, seemed a bit superfluous. But who are we to criticize Shaq Diesel's logo design? Shout out to TVZ Burner for that wonderful AKA.
And inspired by yesterday's episode and my washed old Halloween decorations. I rushed out this morning before this recording and got a 12-foot witch at a Home Depot.
Wow.
That I will witching it up. Be struggling, attempting to put together to for the next 30 days, probably until right up until after Halloween. It comes in a box
at 11 p.m. On Halloween night.
It's gonna be a mess. But anyways, Miles, we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by one of the funniest up and coming stand-ups doing it. She's open for Maria Bamford and TDZ favorite Dulce Sloan. You've seen her on TV and things like Barry. And as Gail in Single Drunk Female, it's Madison Shepherd.
Hi.
What's up?
Hi, guys.
Welcome back, Madison. It's been too long.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad I can come back.
Yeah.
We were just talking about how the last time you were on, the episode was titled, "Turns Out This Trump Guy Is an Asshole." So I think we were being sarcastic, but it feels like it was early in our journey as a podcast and as a country.
100%.
Yeah, I remember that episode because after, I think I said like weed culture was overrated or something, because all these like weed heads started tweeting at me about how I was wrong. And I was like, it's just not for me. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Or just being like, and you're proving it. Like, come on, don't cape for, look, I love weed too, but I'm not going to waste my energy being like, hey, it's cool.
2018 was a different year.
It was a different time. Priorities shifted, hopefully, for those people. A lot of other shit going on that you could maybe get outraged about. But what else is new with you?
Oh, gosh, not much. You know, I'm just really excited. We're shooting season two of Single Drunk Female right now.
Yeah.
Well, they are. Obviously, I'm back home in L.A. right now. So.
Right.
Guest star. So just, you know, I go when they want me and then I don't when they don't. So,
yeah.
You know.
Okay. Where do you shoot that?
We shoot that in Atlanta, actually, even though it's like set in Boston. So Atlanta is like every city. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
They shoot really, everything there.
Yeah. They really make it it's very malleable, that Atlanta. I mean, look, God bless the subsidies.
That's right. Yeah, I feel like I know people who work in the film industry that just moved to Atlanta straight up, or at least I hear about them. I don't know.
Yeah,
them, but
my uncle had like an apartment, or my uncle had, he would just get an apartment there because production was taking him out there so much. Yeah. And then it would be funny, he'd come back from Atlanta and like get his shit mixed up and be like, "Where's that one?" And I was like, "Wait, that's in Atlanta. Never mind, I can't eat there right now."
I could see myself living there. Some of the time, like, I know a lot of people who have like condos there and stuff. Like, it just depends on how often you're there. Like, if you're shooting an hour long TV show, you're there like 6 to 8 months or something, you know, it can be a very long time. And it's like, well, what's the point of not just being there for that time, you know?
Yeah.
What's something you like to do when you're in Atlanta?
I try not to catch COVID. That's kind of my main gig.
I've heard of that. That's actually getting that was big for like a little while in 2020, I feel like.
Yeah.
But people aren't talking about it as
much. Oh, cool. Retro. I like that.
Yeah. Throwback.
For nostalgia.
No, when I'm in Atlanta, I just like, I mostly stay in my hotel. I do get up at the Laughing Skull like a little bit. Like I'll always try to pop in there or whatever Ian Bear is hosting at the time. I will pretty much do any show he asked me to do, but I get wings. I order J.R. Cricket's hot wings.
Yep.
You know, lemon peppers.
How do you get them? Okay, wet.
Yep.
There you go.
And I go to Busy Bees. I get that on Uber Eats. It's not very exciting, you know.
When you're working, it's not like you're like out there being like, well, I have a whole social scene out here, rather than being like, I'm here to work and, you know, do whatever I can in between.
Well, because I know so many people who have lost their gig because they tested positive like days before or hours before they were like slated to get on set. And I'm like, I can't afford it. I'm sorry.
Oh, right. Oh, my God. I didn't even think about that form of bag. Wait, so then in that like instance, do they have like a standby performer in case like in those times? Like we'd be like, well, you know what happens. We're calling up the PA now.
Depending on who it is, like if it's like a series regular or the lead of the movie or whatever, they will halt production. But short of it being like numbers 1 through 3 on the calls sheet,
right?
They just write you out and
they're just right around you.
It's painful.
Yeah.
You're just not in that episode or in that section of the movie or whatever you're shooting. I know somebody who's couldn't film their special because they were literally doing, I guess, like they were a day out from like shooting it. And while they were there, like rehearsing or something, they got a positive result and their special was no longer taping.
Wow.
Yeah. That actually happened to my friend Adele. Yeah. I think she actually had some issues with that. I'm not sure. You guys might have heard of her.
The computer?
She's a real up-and-comer.
Yeah,
up-and-comer. Oh, the singer. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Well, we are going to get to know you a little bit better in a moment. First, we are going to tell our listeners a couple of the things that we're talking about today. We are going to talk about the uprisings in Iran, which aren't just about the morality police and what, you know, they've been going on for 3 weeks. And they're both inspiring, and the government response and crackdown has been horrifying. And, you know, we talk on here a lot about America's lack of revolutionary imagination. And I feel like this is a good one to be paying attention to.
Especially because you look on any American news site and they are like, there's like one article every 6 days and most of it's like, it's bad. And we're not going to tell you about like class solidarity or anything that's occurring.
Right. Yeah, the New Yorker, like it's very much leaderless. And the New Yorker, like, did this profile of Air America, which I'm pretty sure is like the CIA radio station media
propaganda
outlet.
Baby.
Like somebody who works for Air America, who they're like, this is who's really behind this thing. So, you know, the invisible hand of the CIA is always, it's very busy, always working, all of that. Plenty more. But first, Madison, we like to ask our guest, what is something from your search history?
Okay. So I was looking and I was like, I mostly Google stuff for work. So it's like, you know, I write on a countdown show for Roku. And so it's like David Beckham has a show coming out. So it's like number of times David Beckham won a World Series. I don't know.
World Championship Cup, zero.
Or whatever. Right. Yes, whatever he won. Okay, so the last like thing that I Googled where I was like, oh, that's interesting. A couple days ago, I Googled Hong Kong coffin and cage apartments, which are these horrifying like dwellings in Hong Kong. And they have them in other cities too, where it's essentially like they, you know, imagine like, you know, like on a tour bus, how they'll have like, you know, basically bunk beds
that are
little capsules, and like folks will have like, you know, their charger, their headphone or whatever. Imagine living in something that size, like 24/7 during a pandemic with a country that like super duper locks people down and you literally can't leave. It was like a crazy, like eye-opening thing.
Oh my God.
But on the flip side of that,
pictures of this,
it's scary.
Like point of view pictures, actual point of view, not TikTok point of view, which just means everything, but actual like pictures taken by people sitting in their coffin apartments. And it's giving me a panic attack.
And of course, like, you know, these are like truly people who cannot afford to pay for more space. Like this is literally using up most of their income to pay for these like literal coffins. But the flip side of that, which I found interesting, is there is luxury cage apartments, which are similar, but they are like,
I'm sorry,
more expensive.
So what, but as a binary, I would rather be in a cage than a coffin.
Sure.
But immediately my mind doesn't go, of course, a luxury cage home. Like
right.
What is a luxury?
I'm picturing where Hannibal Lecter is housed at the end of Silence of the Lambs. He's in like that big loft space with like classical music playing and lamb being served to him inside a cage. I'm guessing that's not what we're dealing with here.
It looks like you know, in the movie Fifth Element, when they like have to go to the like this and go into the little bed, it looks like that. It looks like the airport hotel.
It looks like a tanning booth. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's luxury. So people pay more for
luxury. It's wild though, too. Like, because this is all obviously because we have a housing crisis globally, and like the options are like, well, obviously you've been priced out of the traditional home market. Might I offer you a fucking cage? Like, what's with the fucking names here? Like, why are we even like, this is, I mean, look, shouts to them for not trying to fucking paint it any other way. They're like, motherfucker, this is a luxury cage.
Right.
And that's that, because it has LED mood lighting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, so, usually the world of real estate comes up with euphemisms, but Cage is pretty, I guess they were asleep at the wheel on that day, you know? They're just like,
yeah,
I don't know, it's a fucking Cage, man. Stop asking me to come up with good spins to put on this shit.
And I guess, like, and I want to say, and forgive me, this was a few days ago, but I think in, like, Tokyo, they have a version of it that is actually luxury, and it's, like, in places like Harajuku and stuff, where, like, the rent is mad expensive, but even the Cage apartment has been elevated to be the cost of a regular size apartment.
Yeah.
It's very crazy.
A lot of capsule hotels or capsule apartments. That's the thing. In Japan, call them capsule apartments, because it's like you're living in a fucking pill.
Yes.
You know, the same size as a pill. But yeah, it's wild that, like, we're constantly just figuring out, like, ways to just be like, have less of a functioning life. Yeah. And, like, learning how to deal with that rather than, like, being like, no. I mean, like, I like the problem we're trying to solve here, but God, we really got to be moving the other way and being like, we need to get people in regular ass houses.
Yeah. I feel like it's only a matter of time before that's commonplace here, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, we're already seeing it with a lot of the, like, sort of shared apartment, like, WeWork type live, like, work cult spaces or whatever. I know someone who stayed in one. They said it was fine, but they didn't stay there for more than, like, a couple weeks. So I'm not sure they got the full, like, feeling of being. And I don't know, like, the way it's always marketed is, like, the ghouls who buy up all the housing are like, it sounds like young people really like these, like luxury prison setups. Right. Now, yeah. Hey, the young kids go over there, and that's in Gen Z block that they have to go to. And it's like, wow.
That was good.
Once these get to America, I can see real estate agents going to work and just being like, this cozy and snug as a bug dwelling is replete with amenities. And
Soho a Jace.
Yeah. You know, in East Hollywood, they have this, like, apartment setup where it's a 2 or 3 bedroom apartment. And essentially, they pair you with roommates, but they're calling it, like, just, like, shared living or something. They have, like, some weird euphemism for it. But I'm like, you're basically just, like, renting a room with 3 strangers you don't know.
Yeah. It's like a boarding house.
More. It's very strange. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Right. Oh, yeah. No, it has already arrived here. Mm-hmm. There are people who are just straight up now. There's an article. California startup offers affordable capsule pods in shared living accommodation.
Yeah. God. So they've gone with the capsule pod wording to, you know, make it more attractive.
Fancy.
It's just weird how, like, we're truly, like, in these two paths where there's, like, traditional, you know, luxury for the wealthy, and how, like, that keeps getting more fucking ridiculous. But now we're also, like, trying to, like, luxurify people, like, not having access either.
Right.
You know, where it's like, you can have luxury as well in your place of little options. And
it's essentially like people with wealth, like, cosplaying to be poor. It's nothing new. You know what I mean? They do it in different ways, but this is just, like, a fun new iteration of it that's, like, barf inducing.
Yeah. Right. Oof, what a time. Yeah. I mean, what do you do if someone, like, farts? Are there rules about that? Because the walls.
What if you have company or you want to, I don't know, stand up, not be laying down?
See, that shows you I don't have a very I wasn't much of a Lothario back in the day. I was mostly always farting in most situations.
Miles is concerned,
and my first thing is like,
what about farts
are you, is this pro fart or do I have to, is there a fart capsule?
I don't think
I can
this is designed for sharing this space at all. Like, I don't think that even crossed anyone's mind when they're doing this. So I think what you're worried about is your own farts in this case. Is that fair to say, Miles?
Okay.
Look,
let's cover that in our next session.
Telling you, man, spice is on your fingertips.
One thing at a time. Look, Jack, you told me spice on the fingers would stop my farting. It didn't.
What is something you think is overrated, Madison?
I think cottagecore is overrated.
Okay.
Like, cottagecore is, like, basically, I mean, it's a style of dress, but it's also, like, an entire lifestyle. It's basically going back to, like, you know, old school, little house on the prairie, simple living, living off the grid, you know, making your own bread, your own butter.
Living off your trust fund.
Basically, yeah.
Because wasn't there, like, one of those people who were there, like, yo, like, I felt there was a cottagecore influencer where people were like, this person has a lot of money. Like, so
they're not actually, I mean, like, as they are living off the land, they are also have a massive financial safety net.
I mean, yeah. I mean, it's crazy. There's a girl who I follow who's like, I live in this cottage in a mountain range. And it's like, the mountain is owned by her family.
Oh, is that the one in Europe?
No, she's in like Washington. I mean, she's a sweet girl, but I'm like, girl, get out of here.
Yeah,
I understand that. Like,
my name is Cassandra Olympia, and
this Olympia Mountain,
yeah,
Cascadia.
Yes,
that's amazing.
But wait, what were we gonna say about it?
I just think it's weird. I think it, you know, I understand like wanting to live more simply. Look, my family, my grandmother lived in a trailer in West Texas. I know about living simply and just having to like make your own food and like go get the water and like what, you know, right, all of these kind of things. But I think it's like, I worry sometimes, like, is this a hop, skip and a jump away from like being anti-feminist, like trad wife, like barefoot, yeah, and pregnant in the house of with no electricity, right, no nothing, with no
right now,
rules.
It's mostly like a feminine aesthetic, like, mm-hmm, the cottagecore. We're not seeing like bro cottagecore yet, where it's like, we're a cottagecore, right, couple, and he's out there drinking his homemade mead and swinging an axe.
Why? I mean, plowing the field.
That's Portland. That's Portland and a lot of Brooklyn, actually. Yeah. That's actually
when
there.
You said,
man,
their homemade mead.
That is, yeah, right there. Yeah. Yeah, I think any style that is based on, that just completely co-opts like a version of history is probably, I don't know. I feel like fashion is where we get to like maybe pull some elements from history, but then combine them to make something new and, you know, yeah, interesting. But if it's just, you know, if it's just like colonial Jamestown or, you know, people cosplaying, I feel like that's a waste of a fashion movement, personally.
It's just, it's elements of whimsy. It's not a, yeah, fetishization, I mean, of fashion or history.
Looking back on even like rockabilly style, like, right, when I was a teenager in the early aughts, there was a lot of like rockabilly looks and we were really hearkening back to the 50s. But like as an adult, I'm like looking back and I'm like, oh, you mean where they like hose down your grandmother? Where,
right,
where, yeah, my like, yeah, dad, like, was born in the colored section of the hospital? You mean, right, that 50s?
My,
oh, okay,
association with these outfits isn't the warmest of memories. Yes. It's usually them screaming in someone's face and a German shepherd like on a leash fucking like
attacking children.
Yeah, like that's what I, but okay. That's what, it's funny though too, like even with like the fash wave haircut, you know, like when everybody was getting like the Hitler, mm-hmm, youth, like fascist hair, and it was like super fashionable at a time. And, yeah, it took a few people with like some historical eyeballs to be like, this is like, y'all are just doing like Hitler youth haircuts, just so you know. And then it became then like suddenly like every conservative is like, yes, I am fascist now. Thank you. I've like, yeah, it's not like, right, it led to the real reckoning of like gender norms or something progressive. And I can't imagine that, you know, if I saw people dressed up in, you know, just like when we see this shit on Airbnb, we're like, hey, stay in a slave cottage.
Right.
I'm like, yeah, no, no. No, no, no. Like, don't even offer the people the idea that they're interacting with such a sordid time in history. But look, cottages are fine. You know, get your gunny sack on,
I guess.
You know, whatever.
I mean, you can also get married at plantations and stuff like that's.
Yeah.
It's weird to me that the like in America, we don't treat plantation sites or sites of former plantations like they do Holocaust memorials, like.
Right.
In Germany, like it's not dissimilar. It's actually, right, quite worse in a lot of ways. I mean, not, I don't actually need to wade into that, but it's horrible both. But we don't even acknowledge that like these atrocities happened here.
Oh yeah,
it's,
of course.
So weird.
It's like, man, remember like simpler times? Like shit, like, right, that's, yeah, like the dog whistle conservatives talk about all the time. Like, you know how when things were simpler, easier times, and it's like, well, sure, for you.
Yeah. I'm also not saying that I'm not trying to compare the Holocaust, yeah, to, yeah, slavery. I just want to be clear about that. I'm just, yes, saying that our country has no acknowledgement.
Yes, chattel slavery was fucking brutal. And, yes, but when we see the sites of those crimes, we do our first, as a country, the first instinct isn't to go, oh my God, take a moment to reflect here.
Right.
It's like,
right,
girl, go run by those fucking columns. I love this. This is where the fucking chariot would pull up.
Yeah. They're like, take pictures for your Instagram here.
Yeah. Which, yeah. I mean, to be honest, look, that shit's happening also at Holocaust memorials where people have no fucking decency or concept of, like, decorum, where people are, like, planking on top of, like, you know.
Oh, my God, wild.
Yeah.
Didn't Ryan Reynolds, America's most likable man, get married on a plantation?
Yeah, to his wife, Blake Lively.
Right.
He's Canadian, man. See, he's trouble. I knew it.
Yeah.
I mean, Canadians weren't that innocent during that time either.
No, no.
I mean,
both,
let's be clear about that.
Both colonizing freaks out here. Mm-hmm.
Mm. What is something you think is underrated?
Something. This is more reflective of what I'm going through as a person. But something I think is underrated is not posting on the internet. Like, we don't need to see. I don't need to share my hot takes, feelings, thoughts, emotions about every subject that comes on the internet. I mean, I went so far, like, I've had a moment where I was like, let me shut up some. Also, the internet is so bad for me. Like, I deleted my Twitter. I deleted my Facebook. I only have IG and I sometimes scroll TikTok, but it's like, I don't need to, like, I'm only using it for promo now. And so I just think, like, shutting the fuck up is just incredibly overrated in general in society today.
Yeah. Giving yourself the ability to be like, I get that right now. Like, we're so, especially on social media, we're just in like that fucking take economy. It's like, mm-hmm. I got to participate in there with my take. And I'm the same way. Like, I get overwhelmed pretty quickly, going on social media and shit like that, where I've definitely had to like throttle shit back, or I can do it in like waves. But yeah, it is. I slowly did lose the urge. Like, I used to have a compulsion to want to post something. Yeah. And over time, I think that's diminished, whether that's through like just becoming older and maybe more like secure in who I am. And I'm like less having to prove myself through like my wit on the internet, or maybe it's the anxiety I get from having to interact or see a bunch of fucked up shit too. It's who knows? But yeah, I definitely agree.
You know what I find helps is just podcast for 2 hours a day, and then you get it all out that way. And...
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's true. Like, since we started doing the show, I post less and less. And a lot of the times, a lot of stuff I would share from my personal life, I talk so much about my life on the podcast. Like, at a certain point, I'm like, I've already given up so much of my, like, intimate stories and shit. Yeah. I don't have anything for fucking Twitter after that.
Right. And here, at least you can explain. Oh, what? Oh, yeah, subscribe. That's a great...
I was going to say, you have to subscribe to the Patreon to get the intimate details of my...
Yeah, obviously. Obviously. Yeah, yeah.
Our life coaching sessions.
The black market Patreon that we got going on.
All right, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
What does optimism look like? I'm on a quest to find the people who inspire us to dream more and do more. I'm Simon Sinek, and I host a podcast called A Bit of Optimism. I talk to all sorts of people, from the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to a hairdresser on Instagram who gives out free haircuts to the homeless, from the CEOs of the world's largest companies to the comedy writer who visited the wreckage of the Titanic. I love talking to leaders, artists, authors, and eccentrics about life, leadership, purpose, mental fitness, human skills, high performance, and other curious things. It leaves me feeling wiser, more inspired, and, well, more optimistic. Because after all, this is a bit of optimism. The world is full of magic and wonder, if you know where to look for it. Listen to A Bit of Optimism on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty: Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty: Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. And usually we don't talk a lot about a lot of international news because this show is about the American zeitgeist, and the American zeitgeist is very difficult to puncture, aka ignorant. The American zeitgeist doesn't pay a ton of attention to news around the world, but I think the uprisings in Iran are incredibly worthy of our attention for a number of reasons. And yeah, so I mean, we've talked about it in passing, but just to kind of
I think there's a couple versions that you could interact with the story on. One is you might just see rampant violence in Iran, like with the government attacking protesters, or you see women cutting their hair in protest, and you might say, oh wow, people are angry, huh? And then you might just keep scrolling past, and that's the most that you'll ingest from that. And, you know, in Iran is a place where there have been revolution or these kinds of mass uprisings before. So people might get into the rhythm of, oh, well, they're having an uprising. I can just now put that to the back of my mind. But just I think it's important to understand just like the totality of what's happening right now, because it obviously the protest began as a response to the death of 22-year-old Zina Mahsa Amini, who, you know, died at the hands of Iran's morality police. And they insisted that they had nothing to do with it. She wasn't beaten to death, you know, and that's despite witnesses saying they saw the complete contrary occurring.
Yeah.
And just for some context, right, it's important to know the sequence of leadership in Iran. At present, the country is ruled by a theocratic government that came to power after the last U.S.-backed Shah was ousted in the 1979 revolution. The reason the Shah was backed by the United States is because of Western greed. So prior to the Shah being installed, Iran was being led by this prime minister, Mohammad Mossadegh, who was very popular. Like, fuck, people were like, yes, we support this guy. Because he had policies like, you know, trying to uplift people. And because of the massive amounts of oil that Iran has in their land, they were also like, you know what, we need to actually nationalize our oil industry. So we are the ones who are reaping the benefits of this oil being pumped rather than the Brits who are here under this like convoluted agreement, which we're not getting a fair share out of the resources that are coming out of our own lands.
Right.
And so when he decided to nationalize the industry, the British, you know, came to the CIA and they're like, yo, we got to fucking, this is a problem. Like, if we have no access to this, this is lucrative. This is not the order of things that we want. So he was ousted in a CIA-backed coup in 1953, led by Kermit Roosevelt, who I believe is a grandson of Teddy Roosevelt or nephew. Yeah. So then the Shah was installed and he welcomed foreign meddling in the oil industry, as well as running a repressive government that basically struck down dissent and exploited labor. So all of this was happening. And then, you know, when the 79 revolution comes, you know, these religious leaders are promising a new vision of Iran, one where like workers, like worker centric, like we understand, like this isn't like the Shah exploiting people, like we want to level things up. But a lot of those things didn't come to pass. So, again, like I said, this isn't the first time that like this has happened in you know, even in this century. Right. Recently, the most notable uprisings have been in 2019 in response to gas prices, which is more of a worker led uprising. And in 2009, during the Green Movement, that was more of a middle class, upper middle class, educated people's movement. But this time things feel different, not just to observers, but to the people in Iran. They began spontaneously, mostly in Iranian Kurdistan, but then quickly to other cities. And typically the protests around wearing like a head covering has been in places like northern Tehran or other metropolitan areas, and was like a middle class, like a middle class movement, or was represented by more middle class people. And it's important to note that the class representation here, amongst many other dimensions of this uprising, because Amini is from this place called Saqqez, which is a very working class area where Kurds are already facing an uphill battle as like an ethnic minority. So what we're seeing now is going beyond like this initial killing. And obviously the increased violence is only motivating people more. But now we're seeing that it's a very intersectional movement involving numerous classes, ethnicities, and even religious beliefs.
Yeah.
And that's like that's a huge aspect of it that I don't anything I see outside of Al Jazeera or like a socialist like world news outlet, you're not going to hear about like these other dimensions that are going on. Obviously, every dimension is just as important, but it seems like Western media sort of picks and chooses what to focus on.
Yeah. It feels very easy for them to just other these people rather than focus on like they're a lot of the protesters who are. So one of the notable things is it's really led by women in the streets, just protesting by showing their hair, like not wearing the thing that the government wants them to wear, and just being free and dancing. But it's leaderless. And I think that is one way the U.S. government is like or the U.S. mainstream media is just like, you know, they're trying to impose leadership on it. The government is trying to attack it by like taking and kidnapping and in some cases reportedly like murdering these like really bright, some of the brightest students in Iran who are involved in the protest, because it is like there's a lot of young people involved in the movement. And these are, you know, leaders in like world leaders of tomorrow and in America of tomorrow who are being, you know, killed. And that's also not something that is getting covered in the mainstream. It's just, it seems very easy for the mainstream media in the West to just other them. And the story sort of fades into the background as trouble in other country, you know?
Yeah. I think just like to your point, right? Like the US version is like trouble in Iran again. People aren't happy because their government's bad. And right. Then it's like, that's the end of it. And I think what's really fucked up too is like the people in the government who like love the like sanctions on Iran might think that their plan is coming together, that, you know, depriving the everyday Iranian of like resources, medicine, food will get them to destabilize their current government, which is like the thinking, right? It's like, hey, man, if it gets bad enough, they're going to do something about it and we can, you know, we can play dirty like that. But the fucked up part of that is too, because of that, it allows like the current government to just sort of paint this as sometimes inauthentic, to say, yeah, like, you see, this is because of Western meddling, this is because of this or that, when it truly is just so widespread that they're actually at a point now where they really aren't sure what to do. Because typically this the ebb and flow would be, well, you come out, you know, be a super violent, quell the fucking uprising, and then move on. But what we're seeing, I think, has a much different texture to it. And from many other people who consistently write about this and report on it, they're like, this has a much different feeling to it because of how, like, you know, widespread the anger is. And it's not just, you know, relegated to like one segment of the society.
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting to me. Like, all I'm seeing, so all I see on like my ads on YouTube are promotions, I guess, or messages, like commercials from women in Israel being like, we support Iranian women, and like, which is like lovely, but I don't understand why I'm seeing it here, because whatever, but that's neither here nor there. But also all I see is it's just like reposts from like white women. So like, I think like for my, in my algorithm, my timeline, how it's being given to me is literally that it's just like a women's right issue, a women's rights issue, which in this country is they're like, oh, poo poo. You know what right, I mean? Right. Like, remember when you guys used to march in the streets a couple of years ago? Oh, well.
Yeah.
Like, it's done. Like, your rights don't matter. We're still actively taking them. So I think that it's getting painted with this, like, I guess, like a pink brush where they're just like, oh, this is women's stuff. And,
yeah,
you know, like they aren't taking it as seriously because it's mostly women who are being outspoken. And then also, that's all that's being fed to me, like as just like an average, well, I guess I'm not really that average American woman, but like just like a regular person
on social media. Yeah, on social the algorithm media. Has deemed a regular American media consumer, right?
They really have.
Painting it with a pink brush is an interesting way to think of it as like a divide and conquer sort of, this is a this issue that you only need to care about if you like wear pink for breast cancer awareness month, or you know, like the things that when we talk about the lack of a revolutionary imagination in the United States, like the things that we're seeing here that I feel like should inform how we think about, you know, organizing and movements in the United States is the, like Miles said, the intersectionality, the cooperation. Like labor is now threatening to strike around oil, which is something that obviously the, you know, the government can't ignore. And what is being painted and portrayed in a lot of cases is this like social justice movement is actually spreading, and there's cooperation between labor and, you know, the Kurds and women across classes. And but yeah, getting labor involved, you can't, like, the government can't kidnap their way out of people not working to like make a functioning.
They'll try. It seems like they'll try to.
Right. And,
of course.
Yeah. I mean, it's there. Like, again, like there are just so many things simmering, you know, because even between the 2009, where, you know, there was another activist who was killed and there was a huge outpouring of like anger over that, you know, people have continued to die protesting or be taken away and disappeared and shit like that. So they're, like, this was, it's been constantly simmering, and now it's turning into a revolution. There was an interesting interview in Jacobin with this activist organizer in Iran, and just talking about how the demands, like, they're evolving. Like, it started about like being about like liberty and body autonomy, and now we're talking like you have people now like fucking fighting the Islamic Republican Guard Corps, like in some cases killing them. And they're now saying things like, no, down with this, like, theocracy, like, down with, like, we want to move into something new. And it's, again, like, the government's crackdown on this has just been to turn up the volume on the violence. And, like, behind all that, too, like, when you look at just sort of the disparity between the haves and have-nots, there's plenty of normal working people who are saying, like, I fucking lost family in the COVID, like during COVID, because of the lack of medical resources that were there due to sanctions or just the greed of the regime, whatever. There are many things that are adding up to our anger. And like, while we have these people in like the ruling class are able to like live lives that are more akin to like, you know, huge cities in Western Europe, like sending their kids abroad to be educated and things like that. And it's all just becoming a lot. And I just want to read this quote from this activist. She, I think, just gave her first name, which is Parande. And she said this: The Iranian public is intelligent. We know when we are being taken advantage of. This is not an uprising, but a revolution. They are killing Basijis, which are members of one of the like sort of elements of the Islamic Republican Guard. They are standing in the face of the army and saying death to the dictator, death to Khomeini, death to the Islamic Republic. They're tearing down and burning down, burning images of Imam Khomeini, Rahbar, and Qasem Soleimani, who was the guy, the Quds Division Islamic Republican Guard, like sort of leader that was killed in a drone strike in 2020. Women are shaving their heads, removing their veils, shouting in the faces of the Revolutionary Guards and morality police. They're standing in front of tanks, fire hoses, machine guns, and tear gas. We have only rocks and our fists to fight with. We are one of the bravest groups of people on the planet. I am really convinced of it. I would say for now, the goal of the average protester would be a revolution resulting in a transition to democracy. But of course, it is subject to change as these protests carry on, which I think they will.
Fuck yeah. All I got to say is like, hell yeah, more of that.
Yeah, burn like you are down. You are the brave. Like, honestly.
Yeah.
When to look like she goes on this interview to say it's a really haunting like line. I just want to. She said, we've been encouraged for 43 years to look into the barrel of a gun and see paradise and to die with smiles on our faces. Why are they surprised now that my generation is fearless? We were born prepared for fighting and have no qualms about death. It's Snaps. Fucking, it's haunting too, you know, because like underneath that bravery, which is, I'm taken aback by that, to hear someone say, I have no option but to fight for something better than what I have now. It's like there are these underpinnings, too, of just like how Western imperialism has contributed to this situation decades ago. And these people have had to constantly fight to the point that, like, again, in her words, death is not something they fear. Yeah, it's just it's all like it's this all encompassing sort of uprising. And again, it makes sense why. You go to like ABC News or NBC News and the things are just about, like, you know, there's tensions or that, you know, this is what the supreme leader is now saying in response to things rather than trying to inform people that there's all of these things that have contributed. That's the thing. I think most of the time is we do news seekers the disservice of never explaining how we get to a point. It's just like, and that's happening in a vacuum.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Back to you, Aaron Judge. Just man, the motherfucker hit 62 home runs, huh? Rather than, hey, why don't you go? I mean, look, there's plenty of forks in the road you could talk about. But again, you have the perfect opportunity to talk about how the CIA backed coup sort of began this countdown for a country that, again, at the time was just trying to say we have natural resources that the West is trying to exploit. How about you give us our fair share rather than this like 70-30 split that we're being offered? Mm-hmm. And that was like, nah, fuck it. We're throwing you out.
The right to use their own natural resources is the, and the CIA was like, no, we can't allow that, and killed people to make it so that they couldn't allow that, so that they could get companies basically a better deal and ownership of those natural resources.
Yeah.
America, man.
Yeah.
I mean, when I hear stories like this, I'm just like, what will it take in our country to have that sort of like revolutionary action? Like, I'm just like, what is it going to take for us to get to that point? Because I mean, we're obviously not in the exact situation of, you know, the people in Iran, but like, we're not like, we're close, you know. And I'm just like, when are we going to wake up and understand that like we as the people have more power collectively to like act and make change happen, you know?
Yeah,
and I think that's probably a part of the reason why it's being undercovered and like not put into the perspective. Like thinking of it as women fighting for bodily autonomy can form the foundation of a revolution for social justice that like intersects with, you know, a minority group that has been persecuted traditionally, like the Kurds, that includes labor and people just wanting, you know, to be able to feed their families. If you treat it as a recipe for, you know, social change and, you know, relevant, it compared it to what, you know, different movements that are happening in the US and like a way to rethink how those movements could work together. But instead, it really seems like they're trying to find ways to siphon that energy off.
Well, and I think it's our own egos as Americans that keeps us from doing it, right? Because we are, though, I'd say the biggest obstacle is American people owning, not necessarily owning, acknowledging the fact that they have been exploited at some level.
And things are bad.
Yeah. Too many people are like, I ain't getting exploited. What the fuck you talking about? I'm not exploited.
Yeah. I got a choice. Job.
I can do this. I'm not exploited. I'm not oppressed. And the difference, this is another really interesting quote from this woman in this interview. She talks about the similarities that she sees between Latin America and the Middle East in terms of their ability, right? Because we're looking at like Luis Arce in Bolivia and people like that, like coming up, and you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
People are in their bag and they get what the stakes are. They get what the stakes are. She said, I find that Latin America and the Middle East are similar in that we both have been exploited, are revolutionary as people, and have large gaps between the rich and peasant classes, and are religiously devout. When thinking about the future of Iran, I often look to Latin America for hope and inspiration. And there is a few elements there that I think aren't quite as vivid to American people as they are to people in the Middle East or Latin America, right? Because we're convincing ourselves, I think a lot of energy spent on soothing people who are currently being exploited into believing they are not.
Oh, I mean, America's entire marketing plan from jump has been, you're the greatest, you're the freest, you're the best. We fought to get away from the British, and now everything is fine. And
we beat up the Nazis just to become them. I mean,
exactly. I mean, also, you know, not to put it all on the people, but like our government goes out of its motherfucking way to quell any and all like revolutionary groups for good and for bad, right? Like the CIA was all in the January 6th, like group chats and like Facebook groups, like heavily involved, getting involved, trying to like stop January 6th from happening or understanding what was happening, as well as like how they treated like the Black Panthers. And hell, I mean, Aretha Franklin apparently had like a 40-year surveillance file from the government because she just wanted Black people to be liberated. Like, we have such a powerful machine that's like keeping us in place and like not able to rise to that.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting when that
I think that's, and I think this is what's happening. I think we're seeing this breakdown happen between the old ways of trying to convince people that everything's okay, or the old ways of stopping an uprising, or like they're just not working in the same way. You know, like I just think of in like the U.S. specifically, this like revival of the labor movement precisely comes because they can spin all this propaganda they want. But at a certain point, you're not at that job with the person who is looking at a fucked up situation and say, I fucking don't want this at all.
Yeah.
And there's no amount of, you know, propaganda or Facebook posts or whatever that can change what your lived experience is. And I think that's the hard part, is the only way to stop that is to actually meet people where they're at and meet their needs.
Yeah.
So if that's not going to happen, you're going to increasingly, you know, have a group of people who are, and this is where it gets dangerous, looking for answers and solutions to what they're like, the cause of their lack as a human being. And that's where bad faith actors come in. And, you know, fascists are like, what'd you say? You need let me tell you who can solve this and who the bad guy is.
Yeah.
And that's what currently I feel like that's what where the knife's edge we're on is, what is the majority of people, what version of getting it back in touch with their power and their ability to advocate for better for themselves, which perspective are they going to go for? The one that says we have to treat certain people worse because it's a zero sum game, or the version that is, we are all people and we can fucking work together because there is enough. It's just there's only the illusion that there isn't enough because we have too many people hoarding too much of the wealth. That's the fork in the road we're at right now. And you see people splitting off. There's people who definitely are picking one over the other, but the critical mass of where that ends up, I think, is really, you know, determinative of where we end up, you know?
Yeah. And I think we do underestimate how much the CIA and the government, or just the, you know, our horniness for the market as a nation, just completely drench and every piece of information that we get. Like it's, unless it's a zine or, you know, a socialist, you know, outlet, which are so few and so far between. Like, just every part of the information economy is pushing in this one direction. And so, like, when it comes to, like, I think we said earlier, like, you know, our ego as Americans to be like, you know, no Americans want to think of themselves as peasants, but they're also, like, not given the tools to really do that if they're not going to, like, get a deep college education or, you know, something like that. Like, it's the mainstream media is really all pushing in the same direction as, you know, what the market and whatever is good for the upward arrow.
And I don't want to say, and I know we talk about, like, the perceived lack of imagination for revolution. People do have it. I don't mean to say that no one understands in this country what the stakes are and is not willing to fight for it.
It's
just that we have been systematically fed, like, we exist in the most potent propaganda atmosphere on earth. That's basically led to the amounts of confusion that, again, benefit the status quo. And I think that's why I think the parts that they're, you know, the powers that be aren't really understanding when they get confused. And it's like, whoa, why are we getting all this pushback on this other stuff? It's because you don't actually live in the same fucking world as the majority of people do. And it's that disconnect that, again, I think will probably potentially be the end for people who overreach to exploit people or to not create more equitable terms for people, because they think that most people are just sitting idly by satisfied with their lot in life, when many are not. Many are asking questions. Many are trying to figure out what to do. And in many instances, we're starting to see people organize.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, the one thing that this woman, Parande, in this interview said, she's like, to Americans, do not call your senators or congresspeople and read some script about this. That is the last fucking thing we need. I've seen that on social media, and it is the absolute, we do not need the help of Congress.
Yeah. It's so fun. Yeah. I'm glad that somebody is understanding that, like, us calling our oppressors to be like, oh, we have a complaint about this, isn't going to help people abroad or here.
Yeah,
they're so good.
Upholding that status quo to keep us oppressed. My God, what a brilliant thing to say.
Yes.
This woman is dope. Whoever she is, like, shouts to her. You know what
I mean? Yeah, we'll link off to this interview she had in Jacobin, because it's really amazing. And I will read this last part, because it's really just a good. The last question that was just asked was, you know, what is your hope for Iran? She said, my hope for Iran is simple. I want us to finally have a say in our own government. We were a monarchy from day one and faced invasions from multiple empires. The West found oil on our land, financed a new monarchy, and overthrew our elected prime minister in a British and American coup d'etat. We started a revolution that was hijacked to prevent the spread of communism and have now been stuck for 50 years. Mm-hmm. It is time we have a say in our livelihood without the interference of foreign powers. Whatever the Iranian masses choose, I will accept. As I said before, the fight of leftists will be the same. We will still advocate for the working class, labor rights, and so on. We deserve to be prosperous and independent.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that all the groups recognize that they are fighting for human rights and the same bodily autonomy and, you know, being impressed by the same force, like, that is something that whenever there's a movement in the U.S. quickly gets, that movement gets othered, you know?
The U.S. Mm-hmm. The U.S. version of this would have been have a referendum, maybe lighten the morality police laws, and then address one dimension of what people are asking about for change, and then just kind of keep it moving again.
And treat it as an extremist Kurdish movement.
Which is something that's happening, or a Western-influenced movement.
Yeah, yeah. To admit, just other the people as quickly as possible, and then obviously, like, you know, some sort of propaganda use of reports of violence to make people feel unsafe.
And also, I mean, like, we'll have to mention that there is, just like in the, who'd have thought, just like in the U.S., this happens all the time with, you know, dirty regimes. They like to have, you know, plants in the protests causing damage to make the move, to try and discredit the movement. Same thing is happening, except these cops are so sloppy. They're, like, on camera fucking up mosques and shit. And it's just like, dude, you're on camera. And then another thing I was really interesting is one of the, like, sort of local law enforcement people in a municipality was saying that, like, the average age of people that they've detained is around 15 years old.
Wow. Yeah.
That's in one part. Like, so this isn't like, this is a mass movement. And yeah, I just, again, can't tell how much like I'm equal parts amazed, inspired, frightened by the bravery of these people, but that's the situation that these people have found themselves in. And yeah. I think to not, you know, for our, for the version that American people are getting, when honestly, like to your point, Madison, like we have a lot in common, we have more in common with oppressed people around the world than we do with the fucking one percenters in this country, mm-hmm. you know, to then feed people this like disingenuous summation of things, which is like, yeah, man, there, Rouhani's bad, huh? All right, you're killing people. Let's keep it there. Don't talk about anything else. Don't give people any more texture to it.
Yeah. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come right back.
What does optimism look like? I'm on a quest to find the people who inspire us to dream more and do more. I'm Simon Sinek, and I host a podcast called A Bit of Optimism. I talk to all sorts of people, from the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to a hairdresser on Instagram who gives out free haircuts to the homeless, from the CEOs of the world's largest companies to the comedy writer who visited the wreckage of the Titanic. I love talking to leaders, artists, authors, and eccentrics about life, leadership, purpose, mental fitness, human skills, high performance, and other curious things. It leaves me feeling wiser, more inspired, and, well, more optimistic. Because after all, this is a bit of optimism. The world is full of magic and wonder, if you know where to look for it. Listen to A Bit of Optimism on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
And we're back. And just briefly, we wanted to talk about, so Walmart built a creepy virtual reality toy store in the metaverse, and it features some of the best-selling toys.
It's an interactive world.
Right. Yeah, we're yeah.
Web3, man.
It's in Roblox, marketed to Gen Z and children. And yeah, it's called Walmart's Universe of Play. It allows kids to play games that feature some of the best-selling toys this year, all while a magical blimp drops virtual toys on you from the sky. Everything about the metaverse just makes me feel like I'm in hell. It's
the parallels of, like, we just talked about this revolution, mass uprising happening in the U.S. Like, hey, kids, put on these fucking reality-changing goggles and live in this fucking space for a little bit, huh?
Yeah, where you get little treats. It's specifically designed to be like a little Skinner box with a little treat trigger that drops little treats on you every regularly, not regularly, actually, randomly, so that you feel like you are can change the outcome is actually how they engineer it. But it's blatantly a commercial targeting kids by enveloping them in a new immersive reality. Also, this relates to the earlier conversation about the casket apartments and cage apartments, because you know this is that's the next step in the whole idea of
don't like what your eyes see, change what your eyes see with this product.
Yeah, why would you need a whole entire living space where you could just go in here and
I hate it so much. I mean I was like, as a poor kid, I grew up very poor in the 90s, and the commercials during children's programming were so gross and toxic, and like, eat this sugar, buy this toy, your old one sucks, get this bike, get this outfit, you need this, push, like so much crazy advertising. And I think that to the point, like, there are some laws that have changed around how you can advertise to children, because there were none.
So many.
And now I'm just like, this is the loophole to those laws protecting
kids. That's exactly right.
Kids. That's and I'm exactly just like, right. Oh, it's so horrifying.
Well, there's no way they could own a blimp, Your Honor.
Yeah. Kids don't watch TV anymore. They're all cord cutters. And so in addition to like YouTube ads, they're trying to find new ways to reach kids. And this is what they've come up with. And people are pointing out that it's illegal. Like even the terms of service for these various VR products, like, say that you can't go in there if you're under 13. Oculus is for 13 plus. Sony's VR headset is for 12 and above. You know, HTC says that children should not be allowed to use its VR headset, HTC Vive, or Vive. Actually don't know that. But
that didn't stop us from going in the AOL chat rooms. I mean, whatever they say.
I was out here saying I was 26.
Well, right. But it's very clear, because Walmart's little toy land has a bunch of stuff from Paw Patrol. Paw Patrol is something that my 4-year-old has already outgrown. Like that's
Paw Patrol is also just like cop propaganda, right?
It's propaganda. Yeah, also for very young kids. It's like I think everybody goes through different things at different times, but like in our household, like the birthday parties that we would go to for, like, it was like more 3 and 4-year-old birthday parties were Paw Patrol, and then the kids move on to other stuff.
What's the Minecraft? Other one? PJ. What's the PJ? What's that one called?
PJ Masks. Yeah.
PJ Masks. Yeah. That's what my niece and nephew's fucking with.
Yeah. My youngest is really into PJ Masks, even though he can't watch an entire episode because he finds it too scary. But he like he has PJ all the Masks? Costumes. It's these three kids who turn into superheroes at night in their PJs, their pajamas, and fight crime at night, which I think it resonates with my 4-year-old, because he does not sleep. He has whatever that gene is that only
that
requires.
Nocturnal.
Yeah.
Oh, like he's like, I need 2.7 hours of sleep.
Yeah,
and
he
I'm
doesn't
recharged.
Need sleep. Like I'm like sitting there with him, like just watching him like stare back at me, just be like, yeah.
And you're he's watching
tired,
you doze
bro.
Off, like the roles are reversed. You're like, oh, I could watch him go to sleep, but meanwhile you're like, he's like, look at my dad.
His older brother like falls asleep hours before him. It's crazy. But anyways, they're blatant. Like, you can't tell me that you are advertising Paw Patrol characters to children over the age of 12. Like, that's, it's just not happening. And even so, that's too young. But well, and the also, whole thing like, is just so dark.
VR on a... Dude, I almost fucking walked through a like a plate glass sliding door with a VR headset once.
Yeah.
Like, and that's me as a fucking, well, you know, high out of his mind, 30-something year old. But
tell the truth.
That's like being a small child. And if I can't have my shit together like that, I can't imagine like a 6-year-old, like... They're going to know the boundaries outside of the headset. And like, if they're in some fake ass toy store, they're going to be like, yay, over here, run over here into the fucking stove or some shit. I don't know.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be shocked if we don't see like a crime, like a big crime be committed because a kid was like, oh, I'm blaming it on VR. Because remember when like those girls murdered or attacked another girl and like blamed it on Slender Man? Which was just like stories they were reading on the internet. Like, it's only a matter of time before something like this is going to cause a child to really not understand how reality works. And the internet
is already like social media is already a huge danger for children. The, like, children should not be using social media.
Make that more vivid, terrible. For them?
And this is like more immersive social media. It's basically what this creates. So it's very dark.
Don't put that headset on. Don't put the headset on, kids.
Yeah. Just
although I kind of want an Oculus. I'm not going to lie.
I want that shit too.
Yeah.
I don't want it.
Look, I think the best part about that stuff is like, it's given me a new way to watch TV. Cause I remember like, there's like a theater mode and you can be like, whoa, I'm watching this fucking big movie. But yeah, I mean, I love gadgets and shit.
I just got into Animal Crossing in the pandemic. So that's about as far as I've gotten.
Yeah.
And I played another game called like Little Miss Misfortune or something. But like, you know, I don't know if I'm actually going to be able to handle an Oculus. I can't survive Mario Kart. I suck at it.
Don't do it with a headset on. Right?
So, anyways.
Well, Madison, such a pleasure having you. Where can people find you, follow you, all that good stuff?
So even though I don't like social media, but still, you know, follow your girl because the people who hire me care about my social media numbers.
Exactly.
You can follow me on Instagram at Madison_Shepherd, S-H-E-P-A-R-D, or on TikTok. I believe it's the same at Madison_Shepherd.
Amazing. And is there a tweet or some other work of social media or media in general that you've been enjoying?
So there's this kid on TikTok and Instagram called Sean McManus. He is a cast member of Beetlejuice on Broadway. And I don't know if you guys remember a couple months ago, there was a church in Texas who did an unauthorized version of Hamilton, where it's basically like, and in summation, Hamilton should be about Jesus. And if you're like LGBTQ, like you are basically addicted to drugs. It's the same. It was very weird. Anyways, it got the shit suit out of them. But so this kid, Sean McManus, does Patti LuPone impressions. Patti LuPone is a famous Broadway actress who is like a 3-time Tony winner, I believe. Just an incredible talent. If you don't know, like, look her up. Anyways, he does this crazy impression where he does like Patti LuPone, like, performing selections from the unauthorized Hamilton. And I don't know why as a former theater kid, it tickles me to no end. It is hilarious. It's flat. It's like so camp and silly. And literally I think about it like maybe once a week.
Oh shit.
I dropped the link in the chat.
All right. You'll definitely see that in the footnotes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a fun one.
Awesome. Miles, where can people find you with the tweet you've been enjoying?
Oh, man. Find me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray. If you like basketball, check us out on Miles and Jack Got Mad Boosties, our NBA podcast. The season is it's quickly
it's the best part of the season where anything can be true, where a single good preseason play by a player. And I'm like, what? Oh my goodness. Yes,
or maybe a player missed less shots than normal.
Yeah.
And you're like, we're going. We're there, man.
He's going to be a problem.
And if just wait, despite what the stats say in history. And if you like 90 Day Fiancé, check myself and Sophia Alexander out on our other podcast, 420 Day Fiancé. smoking loud and getting loud about trash reality TV. Let's see. Some tweets that I like. First one is from Corey at coolmathgame_ tweeted, random guy. It's not a big deal, man. I just don't think it matters. Me pulling out a gun. The two main characters in a show called Veggie Tales are fruits, and that doesn't matter to you? Waving gun around. It's not a big deal? Think about that. This one was another one from at Kona Slater tweeted, saying the body of Christ each time I give my dog a cracker. And then Dan Toomey at DH Toomey tweeted, levels of male friendship.
Yeah,
just met. One. Seems like a cool guy. Hung out twice. I got a buddy who go out on weekends go out on weekends. I got a buddy who literally best friends. I got a buddy who known each other for life. I got this buddy who.
That's it.
So true.
Those are the levels.
It seems like a nice guy. And I got this buddy.
Yeah. Yeah. Seems like a cool guy.
Yeah.
He seems cool.
Yeah, he seems like a cool guy.
All right. You can find me on Twitter at Jack_O'Brien, liking things like Kristen Stockdahl tweeted a screen cap of a news headline, Kim taunts West by launching test missile over Japan. And she tweeted, an interesting development in the Kim Kanye saga, which it was a story about Kim North Korea.
Yep.
Taunts West.
And then they just fired some missiles back in the sea, too. This shit is...
Laugh Cry Coffee tweeted me, any Costco requests? Husband who is out of deodorant, toothpaste, and work snacks. Nope, I'm good. And then Depths of Wikipedia, Depths of Wiki tweeted, love how the Kayak Wikipedia article has a section that's just roasting this child. And apparently the picture for kayaking is a child, and the caption is, child using oversized equipment. The kayak is floating too high. It is too wide for his hips and shoulders, and it is so deep that his elbows hit the deck. His paddle is also too long. It is impossible for him to paddle efficiently, and he will tire quickly. His PFD is also large enough to slip off over his head while fastened. So it's just, somebody just got mad when they saw this picture and just roasted this motherfucker. Who is?
Hey, but that's just maybe 13 years old.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I love that.
But try that harder. Personal flotation device, looking way too backy though, my man.
Yeah. Anyways, you can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes.
Footnotes.
We link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as a song that we think you might enjoy. Miles, what song do you think people might enjoy?
Oh, man. So I posted that video of the DJ three-piece trio that was at the wedding I was at over the weekend. The dude was playing sax and another dude on trombone, just killing it. Yeah. And a lot of people were like, yo, what's the track? Some people thought it was Too Many Zoos, which I know what you mean, because they would get down in the train stations in New York with their big Barry saxes. I think they went to the New School. They're jazz guys. But this actually is from this old track called Calabria by Rune. It's like an old house track. That's where that sax sample, I believe, is originally from. So listen to that. Go back to the year of my high school graduation and LeBron James's as well, and just float away to Calabria by Rune.
Amazing. All right. Well, The Daily Zeitgeist is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, wherever Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Damn.
Oh no, the computer is glitching. That is going to do it for us this morning, but we are back this afternoon to tell you what is trending, and we will talk to y'all then. Bye.
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 The world is full of magic and wonder, if you know where to look. And I'm obsessed with looking for it. I'm Simon Sinek, and I host a podcast called A Bit of Optimism. Each week, I have a short conversation with someone who inspires me or teaches me something about life, leadership, and other curious things. I hope you'll join me on the journey. Listen to A Bit of Optimism on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. This is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200 percenters. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more. Then every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community. Listen to Life as a Gringo on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.